Hello and welcome to the ChooseFI Radio Podcast. In today's show, we're going to explore our takeaways on the episode with Chris Hutchins from Grove. Tim shares his path to FI, which involves a great income shovel, but the ever-present lifestyle creep. Luke shares his house hack while being in the military. And then we discuss what is quickly becoming our favorite financial tool, M1. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to ChooseFI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI. Your home for financial independence online.
All right, man, lots to cover in today's episode. It's one of those things that we have set ourselves up to try to constantly be learning new information, finding new tools, finding new life optimization strategies, both on the financial side and on the personal side. And you realize that it's not just easy to do this, but man, the journey is so much fun. And I'm excited to dive into this past week's episode.
Yeah, I totally hear you, Jonathan. This was a great one with Chris Hutchins from Grove. Just enjoyed meeting him, enjoyed getting a chance to kind of pick his brain and find out about his story. And yeah, it sounds like a very cool company they've put together and done it for the right reasons. So yeah, we'll certainly dive into that in a couple of minutes. But yeah, what's going on by you?
Well, the biggest thing is my son, he is growing up, man. Like I kind of, you know, I remember him being born and I remember him crying through the night and us trying to figure out that whole situation. But just yesterday, he literally had a hand on one toy and then he picked up the other toy. And just for a second, he didn't realize it, but he was standing on his own. He had his own balance. And then he realized it and he freaked out and he sat down. But we are right at the cusp of watching him walk. And this is amazing because he was born about this time last April. And if you remember the day after he was born, we came and we recorded a show for the podcast. So this has all happened so fast. It's just amazing to kind of watch these, both of these things, my son and this podcast, grow together.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. And yeah, congrats, I'm sure. I think Danny took a picture of it, right? And put it on Facebook. I feel like I saw him standing and he's so big now. It's crazy.
It is. It really, really is. Hey, not too much longer and I'm going to get him employed on the show in some capacity. I'm going to start working on funding that Roth for him. I don't know what that early age is, but we need to really look into that.
Nice. Hey, well, Jeremy from Go Card Cracker, right? He took pictures of his son and put him on the website and put him on the cover of Winnie's book, I think. So I'm not sure that there's necessarily an age that you can do it. But yeah, if we can find legitimate work for him, let's do it.
And, you know, he's only one, so that's probably a little bit of a hard task. But hey, Anna, you know, she's trying to become a millionaire by the age of 14. There's probably room for an internship. I don't know. We got to think this through.
That would be cool. The funny thing is she loves to write. And I was actually thinking about starting a blog for her. I know we talked about that recently, just in the past episode or two, about how to start a blog. And that actually piqued my interest of, wow, this would actually be pretty cool. Like, here's this kind of second generation, ultra, ultra frugal little kid.
Dude, I got to cut you off. Like, we locked down that domain, secondgenerationfire.com. Why don't you start having her write a couple articles and we'll post them up there. And then if people have their kids want to write their first article, you know, like just what is it like to be second generation FIRE from their perspective, they can send them to us and we can post them there as well. How amazing would that be?
Wow. That's a really good
idea. I had that live. That was just now.
Yeah. I was going to tell you how Anna admonishes us for spending too much money, but yeah, that's that completely supersedes my thought for sure. Yeah. That's neat, man. I like that.
Well, tell us how she admonishes us. Let's hear about that. I don't want to cut that short. That could be an article though.
Yeah, no, it certainly could be. And yeah, I fear that she might be a little too hard line for second generation FI. She's a bit of a nut sometimes. But yeah, I mean, I had mentioned how we're buying a new house. And while we are trying very hard not to succumb to any kind of lifestyle creep, of course, sometimes you have to buy new things. I think we bought a new television because ours is basically broken. And it was really cheap. And it was like $400. But she was aghast that we were spending $400 on anything. This kid is crazy. crazy. So like we had to make the case to her of how much value we're going to get from it, how many years we'll use it, what this is going to cost us per month, essentially. And at the end, I think she grudgingly accepted it. I mean, she still wasn't like completely on board.
I love the accountability. What a crazy place for it to come from, though.
Yeah, it certainly is crazy. But yeah, she's funny. And yeah, that would be cool. I love that idea. Let's do it.
I love it, dude. That's so much fun. And it is really cool to watch these kids grow up with this mindset. And I can't wait to see what it means for my son. I hope that he takes a portion, maybe not all of what Anna's doing, but definitely learns from a portion of that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to be exactly like her in that regard. A little too hardline, but yeah, definitely some learning lessons. She's got her head certainly in the right place. So it's good stuff.
But you got to imagine, this is kind of where Chris found himself as a kid. Chris Hutchins from Grove, from this past week's episode on Monday. And if you haven't listened to that yet, it is episode 71. You can go to chooseify.com/071 to listen to the episode. But this is a guy that from a very early age was just looking to do things a little bit differently. In his mind, he was inspired, you know, not actually by his parents as much, but rather from his grandparents. They just instilled this value in him, and he saw them making these, you, what may have seemed like overly frugal choices. And it sounded like, at least to his parents, those choices were kind of embarrassing. But for him, it was inspiring. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights for me too, is talking about his origin story and really how he just picked this up from his grandparents. And the one thing that I thought was funny, because I know we do it as well, Laura and I, is that his grandparents would bring all this food on vacation, right? And to me, it is, I'm sure most people hear that and say, wow, that's a lot of effort and really, really frugal. But to me, it's like, wow, you can save all that time from going out to dinner and spending a boatload of money on unhealthy food, or you can bring your own food and it saves a whole lot of time and a lot of money. So we've actually done that before. It's a little embarrassing to say aloud, but when we went to Disney World a couple years ago, we wound up actually bringing like a hot plate and a pan and I think a pot actually to boil water. So we literally made grilled cheeses for the kids, macaroni and cheese, and they are a little bit picky with their food. So it was partially that, but also it was home cooked food. It was nice and easy and it was right there. So maybe the health part is not so great on macaroni and cheese and grilled cheese, but it certainly worked for them. And it was this funny little thing. And we have this memory now of packing all this stuff into our luggage to fly down to Orlando.
Wow, that is amazing. So you're actually packing it to bring on a plane. I don't think I've ever even considered that. Now, I know that at least when we make the family trips down to like North Carolina to go spend a few days down at Nag's Head, we are the family that we're not going to be going out to eat, most likely. It's going to be, you're going to be going to the local grocery store and you're going to be bringing it home, making a family made meal, you know, eating mostly in that regards. But that's kind of taking it to the next level right there.
Yeah, I think Laura's going to be embarrassed that I said that out loud, but oh well. And
I'm sure this won't be the first time that Brad has had to walk something back.
Yeah, but I mean, I really am not embarrassed by anything we do. I mean, it's something that we made that decision that it worked for our lives. And is that a little extreme? Yes, unquestionably it is. That's probably one of the more extreme things we've done.
But Anna is proud of you.
But Anna was very proud and she enjoyed her food. So it was a win-win.
Nice, nice. So one of the things that really stood out to me as I was listening to you guys talk in this particular episode on Monday about, you know, how you went about optimizing even the choice for college, it struck me you both chose this very similar path. Both of you guys really had your choice of any school in the country. If you wanted to go to the Ivy League schools, you could have pulled that off. But you recognized that while you could be in there, you would just be another member of the herd. It would be very difficult for you to stand out. So, but you could pick an amazing school, but maybe not one of those top 10 or top 20 schools. And now you had this opportunity to really set yourself apart and get opportunities that you wouldn't have had in that other pond. And I was fascinated by that in particular because that is the exact opposite of the position that I found myself in. I was totally the mediocre student. I struggled to get the 3.5. I mean, that was really me going all in to be that 3.5 student. I was not even going to stand out even in, you know, maybe one of the lower tier schools, far outside of those. And What was amazing to me is like, there's multiple ways to beat this game. If you're listening to this and you're like, well, I kind of identify with them, then there is like a path for you. You should be thinking the way that Brad and Chris are talking about. But if you more identify with me and grades are not the thing that comes together easy, you are just bad at standardized tests, there's still a way for you to win this game. But the strategy that you use may be slightly different. And I'd love to explore that a little bit more. I just found college was always very difficult for me. I did well enough to perform and get the outcome that I wanted, but it wasn't just a taken for granted. So I don't know, that just something that resonated with me. And it's just kind of a difference of experience. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that. But before I do that, I wanted to highlight the common ground, which was this idea of always optimizing things. You know, I think one of the most powerful things that Chris said was this: as a kid, you feel the need to be rebellious. But he realized early on that while people were going full Nelson on being rebellious, there's a line, a point of diminishing returns for that rebellion. And there is a place for these relationships. There's a place for realizing that people that have dedicated their lives to teaching students, to being deans of colleges, to a life of service, in many cases, these are the gatekeepers that can speed up your access. And they want to help you. They can't help everybody, but for that select few, those people that show engagement, show interest, if you realize that opportunity is there, there's a way to cultivate those relationships. And I'm not talking about being spammy. And that is a way to set yourself apart. So, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Brad, both from the perspective of someone that basically had their choice of college, but also someone that realized the value of relationships, honestly, much earlier than I did in life.
Yeah, well, Jonathan, I think what you just said there with cultivating relationships, that's the essential takeaway here. Frankly, I might have had my own limiting belief that if I went to one of those ultra elite schools that I would have just been a nobody. Doesn't that sound like a limiting belief to you? To my ears now, it does, because I said to myself, you will truly be a nobody. You'll be below average at those schools. But what if I was armed with the same knowledge I had now and tried to cultivate those relationships? Why could I not have done that there? So I think that probably is my own issue, frankly. But even taking that aside and just saying cultivating relationships, that's what matters in life. And you see it all throughout Chris's story and certainly with college. And I saw this myself. Like I said on the podcast, I wound up being one of the vice presidents of the student government, and I was on the president's council for this, and I was friendly with the dean, and, you know, just all these things, but they weren't because I was especially great at anything. It was just that I had built relationships with people and I cared and I put in the time. So I think that transcends everything. It transcends college or your college choice or whatever dopey thing that, you know, we're talking about here. Like, it, this is about life. It's about finding those relationships and building them in a genuine manner. And you saw Chris do that with his dean, who magically made this investment banking job appear. I mean, those don't just grow on trees, but obviously he went to bat for Chris. And that's because of the relationship they had built. Chris talked about when he moved to Silicon Valley, he stayed in his middle school teacher's house. How crazy is that? Think about that. Who even remembers their middle school teacher, not less keeps in touch with them well enough to stay at their house when they move to a new city? That's the sign of someone who has made connections throughout their life. That's the takeaway for me. So, Jonathan, I'd love to hear A, your thoughts on that, and B, going back to the college thing, since you put that on me, like, what would you have done differently, no matter where you went to school? To me, that's irrelevant. It's just, what would you have done differently knowing what you know now, actually at your 4 years there in undergrad?
I think I would be very honest with myself about my strengths, and I would very deeply consider how it's going to parlay into a career and how a career is going to parlay into the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. I know that's a lot to ask of a student, but for our community, if I knew then what I know now about opportunity cost, about the value of savings rate, I would look for something that is an above a median income job that I thought that I could enjoy, that does not require, you know, a massive amount of schooling. 8 years of schooling is too long to get a degree for something that's going to earn just above a median income. That's opportunity cost right there. Now, with that in mind, I would look, all right, what's the cheapest way that I could get that degree? Because I want to follow, honestly, I want to follow more of Scott's path, Scott Trench from Bigger Pockets, where he was basically done in pursuing just what he loved at this point, not for the money, by the age of 28. That's the play that I want to position myself for. You know, what's really interesting, Brad, is that, you know, when you were mentioned maybe a couple weeks ago about how in Virginia, if you can hit that 3-4 GPA, you're basically guaranteed acceptance into most of the state schools based on a program that we have. And there may be other states that have something similar. And you said that nobody talks about that or knows about that. As you were saying that, I didn't respond at the time, but it's almost, I don't know what it is. Maybe I just have a blind spot, but that's exactly the program that I took advantage of. And so let me explain that a little bit further. If you go to a my dad was a community college, is a community college professor. And so maybe I just heard about the program because of what he did. I did the 2 years at community college. And from there, I got automatically accepted into Virginia Tech. And then I finished my 2 years there. Now my plan, that's very optimal. I mean, at that point, I have my 4-year degree with about $12,000 in debt. And it kind of goes downhill after that with regards to, you know, you obviously I came out of pharmacy school with like $168,000 in debt. So my plan kind of went suboptimal from there. But going back to the beginning, what I would do, I would figure out how I could get as many of those community college credits as possible using AP and CLEP test. I actually did test out of a few of them, but I never considered it as a strategy to get more of them done. I just kind of randomly tested out of a couple of them. So I would make that a strategy, get that done, try and knock that out at the age of like 17, you know, 16, 17, 18. If you can get that first year basically taken care of, that's done. Now you got 1 year of community college. And then once you have that down, you get guaranteed acceptance. And I would probably end up focusing based on whatever my interests are in one of these degrees that I know just give you as many options as possible when you graduate for getting a job. I don't want to come out with something that then now I'm wondering, oh, wow, what job can you get with this? Oh, wow, I got to go back to grad school. That doesn't seem like a great idea. You know, so I would be very focused on that. That is probably the place that mentally I wish I could go back to that. If you can get all of that in place, you come out, you get that just above a median income job, but you don't have the debt. With some of the other stuff that we talked about, this looks so easy. And if you're just saying, all right, well, while everybody else is in grad school, living off of student loan debt, trying to get to the point in 30 where they can crush the game, I'm just going to crush the game between the age of 20 and 28. And I'm just going to be done at that point. Maybe I'm living, you know, excessively frugally, extremely frugally, quote unquote, but everybody else is doing it anyways, just in the context of basically fake wealth being student loans. And I'm not going to be paying for that over my 30s. I'm not going to lose that decade. I'm going to use my 20s to just beat the game. That's kind of my new mental frame. And a lot of that is variable. You can tweak that to your own personal preferences. We could talk about trade schools, not even college, not even being necessary altogether. But at my optimizing brain with everything I know now just thinks there was a way to do that smarter. And I think many people do look down on community college. In fact, I think one of the biggest problems that community college faces is attrition. People get in, and because this is something that maybe they don't take seriously, maybe they're doing it as a part-time thing on top of a full-time job, they don't view it the same as a 4-year college. And they just let themselves burn out or get out over a year or two. And then a year or two later, they've just wasted that time. If you view it as a financial opportunity, as part of your game plan, everything opens up to you. So just to put that in perspective, all of those classes got moved over to Virginia Tech. And when I graduated with my 4-year degree, I didn't have a 2-year degree from Virginia Tech and a 2-year degree from community college. I had a 4-year degree from Virginia Tech that I only paid for 2 years of. So I don't know. That's my particular perspective coming back to it. And it's just another approach. But like, I was never going to be one of those Harvard guys. I was never going to be one of those guys that was going to have my pick of schools. But I still had a strategy and I have no problem with it.
Wow, Jonathan, I'm learning so much about you. I feel like just in the last couple of weeks, it's crazy. It's even though we know each other pretty well. I didn't realize you were homeschooled until a couple of weeks ago when you mentioned it on the podcast. And now you're the first person that I've actually met in person who did that community college to the guaranteed acceptance program with the state of Virginia. That's really, really neat. I have been eyeing that for like before my kids were born even. It just was one of those like little life optimization strategies that I looked into and said, wow, if someone was smart enough to do this, that is just absolutely brilliant. And I just assumed you went to Virginia Tech for 4 years.
I'm right? sure because everybody you, does. There's no yeah. reason for someone to think otherwise unless you have a reason to talk about it on the podcast. Right. Why it's like, but oh, who yeah, cares, who right? cares? I don't care. My 30s. Honestly, do you look back? Do you remember anything that you learned in your first year of college and your first 2 years of college? That was just 2 years of your life. I mean, that's just, no, that's just
and
that's, gone.
That's my whole point, honestly, is that why would you not do this program? And I'm sure, like you said, these programs, I would be willing to bet exist in other states or certainly something like it. Or if not, just get a 2-year degree at a community college and then transfer in with a significant amount of credits to a 4-year university and get that degree. Because all that people look at is that 4-year degree. That's what matters. And I'm sure your pharmacy school didn't care that you went to Community College, you had a degree from Virginia Tech, which is a phenomenal college, right? So that is really incredible that you did that. What a cool story.
Awesome. Glad I could share. Glad it was helpful. Hopefully it rounded out the conversation. But I was like, man, I have something to add to this. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because. Maybe it honestly is because there is a part of you, a subconscious part of you that is like, oh, well, that's kind of embarrassing. Or, wow, that's not, everybody else talking about this great school that they went to and I just did community. I don't know, but I don't really feel that way. I don't care. That's not my identity. My identity is someone that is found something that I'm passionate about doing and, you know, is on this path to financial independence. Like, you are more than the job that you do and you are more than the college that you went to. That's just, you know, it's just it should be a universal truth.
Unquestionably. And no one listening to this podcast cares one iota where you and I went to college. That's so irrelevant. I mean, that's when we were kids. There's nothing you should be embarrassed about, first of all. And second, that is a great second generation FI story that, yeah, should have came out long before this. That's so cool.
I know. You're absolutely right about that. I don't know what went wrong there. So I know that was massively off topic, but I think it was helpful. I think it adds something to the conversation. But let's go back and talk about Chris's story. And like, there's so many little things here. And in particular, I'm thinking about this thing. He was lit up by hearing that there is a section of this country, there's a city or an area in this country where just everybody is just thinking about big ideas. And he's like, I have to be there. This is where people explore these big ideas and put this stuff together. I have to move there. And what really stood out to me, honestly, was we asked him, like, who's giving you permission to do this? Is it your degree that has this? Is it all your contacts that give you access to this? Who is giving you permission to go out and just do a startup? What are you looking at from your background that says that I can start a tech company? And he's like, to be honest with you, my best friends told me that we, as and they were talking about themselves as well, are know nothing. He used the word clowns. So that's like a classification that's used to describe us as a collective group. But we like to think about big ideas and we like to put together teams of people who are interested in this. And he came up with this term for this skill set called business development. And long before he had his own business and it was Grove, he was looking for other people that had come up with big ideas and were looking people that were willing to take lower salaries up front to help them develop their big idea.
Yeah. So just to fill in the blanks there, he was, I guess, that clown because they weren't coders. So where in Silicon Valley, most of everyone has these real technical coding skills, he didn't have that, but he had other skills, right? And that's what we talked about with the talent stack. And he talked about a couple of these different things where to get that first job, he created a 20 plus slide presentation instead of just sending his resume like everybody else. And that focused strategy really is what led him to this success. That catapulted him into his entire career. Just taking that one extra little step and trying to stand out from everybody else. That type of thing is important. He talked about where he took an inventory of all his assorted skills in life and tried to find these companies that he could work for on the side. Who's really doing that in real life? Who's actually sitting down and saying, okay, here are the various skills that I have in my life that I could use to help businesses around me. I don't know that many people that have ever actually done that, but now we know Chris. And that's a great lesson for everyone out there in the audience to say, all right, how can my skills really help people? Because assuredly they can. Just by taking in information like this, just generally puts you way ahead financially. There are many businesses that don't know anything about finance that I'm sure that can help. I'm sure you have different technical skills from your background, from your current job, from prior jobs, all this stuff. It adds up to that talent stack that we're constantly talking about. You just never know where that's going to lead you to a job, to a side hustle, to some future career. So just keep your mind open and keep your eyes open to opportunity.
One of the reasons that he got that job, you know, he did this inventory and he realized, you know, I don't have a ton of hard skills, but I have lots of soft skills. That's where the talent stack comes into play. You know, it's not that you don't have a pharmacy license. If you don't have a pharmacist license, you will never be able to become a pharmacist. If you haven't passed the bar, you can never practice as a lawyer. There are these legal requirements that will keep you out of those fields. But there are so many high paying jobs out there that don't require hard skills. They require soft skills. And when you're talking about soft skills, it's just your talent stack. And honestly, one thing that we haven't really highlighted that Chris landed on was the value of sales. And honestly, if you think about what he had been able to pull off this entire time, he's incredibly good at building relationships and filling needs, finding a product to serve a need. He implements them in his own life, so he benefits from those. And then he loves to talk about those. In many cases, Brad, that's something that everybody should be considering. You know, I think sales is the only job that will, it will never, never go away. That everything moves on sales. You're finding somebody that has a need and you have a product that can fit that need, and you're connecting those two together. And your ability to do that is your ability to cultivate relationships. And like, that is what, when he talked about business development, he landed on that. And when he went and applied for that job with that focus strategy that you were referring to, the reason that he got it is because this job didn't require hard skills that we were just referring to earlier. It required someone that was willing to go in and dig around and root around and think of 100 different ways that he could help them and then bring that talent stack to bear. That's why that strategy worked with that initial company. And I think that that actually takes us back to the episode that we did with Scott Trench. That was episode 63. And in that episode, he basically went in and he talked to Josh at Bigger Pockets. And he said, how can I help? I want to help you. You have inspired me. This is exactly the type of project that I want to partner on. And I think I can do this and I can do this. And he's always coming up with these ideas. And of course, he got added to the team. And it's no surprise now that he's the vice president of operations. These are not dissimilar messages. This is the common theme. You know, you get passionate about the idea. It could be your idea, which carries you into getting a team to coalesce around you and build a startup or a product. Or it could be you getting inspired by somebody else's idea and going in and saying, look, you're doing this, but you could be doing so much more. And I would love to help you grow this. That is the sort of thing that it doesn't require a doctorate or a master's degree. It requires a talent stack. It requires demonstration of what have you built. It requires you going out with that open hand and saying, hey, I want to help you with this.
Yeah. And Chris said, just being on the other side of the table now and being the CEO and the founder of a business, he would love it if someone came to him like that with all these ideas, with going that extra mile to have that presentation or just something unique, as opposed to being one out of 1,000 people who applies with their cookie cutter resume, right? So that's another lesson for the audience, and an actionable takeaway is just try to stand out. How can you and your skills and abilities stand out from the crowd? I'm sure you can brainstorm away. So why not implement that? I think that's just a crucial lesson for everybody out there. And actually, an aside, Jonathan, Scott Trench actually just got promoted to president at Bigger Pockets. So
Scott, sorry, I didn't know. I president of operations. I stand corrected.
Yeah, he's the president there. So congrats, Scott. That's really, really impressive. So that's just in the couple months since we've spoken to him. So pretty cool. And yeah, just going back to Chris, it was funny how he's become that meme as part of his friend group where he's laughably frugal, as he called it. And all of his friends know this and he just owns it. And I thought that was a cool quote. He owns it instead of feeling guilty about it. And yeah, I mean, none of us should be embarrassed about our life choices. Like I said earlier, I do some things that I understand are outside the norm, but I don't say they're weird or something that I don't want to talk about. I mean, sure, it's funny to joke, but I'm very content with the choices that I make in life. And I do own them because they make sense to me. And that's why I pull the trigger on those decisions. So I think that's important also, is just feel comfortable in your own skin. Obviously, we know just by listening to this podcast, by being in the financial independence community, we are not the average Joe or Jane. Whether we think that's the way the world should be or not, I mean, I think this should be mainstream thinking, frankly, but it's not. We just simply know that it isn't. So we know we're in that 1% of people who are trying to save, are trying to reach financial independence, and we're going to get there. But obviously, that's not the norm. But can you find a way to explain that to the people around you in a way that makes it sound normal and regular? I think I've come up with a way to explain that, and it's worked to pretty good effect in my own life. I know, Jonathan, you're kind of working on that. That's a work in progress, and I'd love to hear an update actually on that. I know this is kind of a tangent, but I think that is something that we can do, is not be ashamed of being frugal or some weirdo who wants to save money. You got to own it and feel comfortable about what your choices are.
You know, Brad, it really has. And I got to say that this podcast has forced me to focus my messaging and really understand my why a lot better. You know, I think when we did episode 1, I wasn't ready to verbalize it, which is why the YFI ended up being episode 38. but I've probably reached even more clarity on my purpose since then. And we actually got an email from Scott, who writes over at simplyfinance.com. And I'll put a link to this article in the show notes. And he says, Brad and Jonathan, I've been a listener since December, and your podcast has given me a lot of clarity and direction on my passion for personal finance. I've always liked personal finance, but I haven't condensed and refined what my stance and beliefs were until I started listening to the podcast. I'm way more clear and confident when I discuss or write about finances. He says, I don't expect you to read this because I know you guys are busy, but I shared my story in the YFI this week in the article. This is the one that I'm going to include in the show notes for today's episode. And Scott is actually an educator, a counselor, helping people with their finances. And I think, you know, a lot of us get very glued in the nuts and bolts and the numbers, and it's hard to take that step back and understand the psychology, understand the worldview that's attached to this. And that is what shifted for me. When I started, it was all about hitting some mythical number or magical number, which all my problems went away. But what shifted over, you know, 120 some odd episodes is it's now like a worldview. It's a way of interacting with society. And it's a journey where it's not just an end destination. So I don't know. For me, my ability to communicate this stuff and talk to people about this has definitely gotten easier. Now, I wouldn't say that it's just taken hold in my neighborhood and that everybody's on board like you're seeing, but it, you know, certainly in my own mind, I have a lot more peace about like how to interact with people on this topic and what FI means for me. So Danny's actually started listening to this podcast. Well, Danny's always been listening to the podcast, but now she's been listening to the podcast ahead of time as she's kind of helping us prepare our notes for the Friday Roundup. She just loved, absolutely raved about Chris's approach on these memorable moments, man. And I know that was a highlight for you, but just it absolutely resonated with her. And I'll definitely want to get your thoughts on this. But she said, one of the things that we could do is there are all these amazing parks in Richmond. What if a couple times this summer we connected with the Richmond local group and we said, let's meet at one of these parks that we've never been to, maybe like 3 Saturdays out of the entire spring and summer. Let's have a picnic, you know, an open picnic and like Frisbee and everything else. Like, let's just take everybody out there that wants to come and just have a giant meetup. That would be memorable.
That would be awesome. I'd love to do that. So first off, and second off, it's neat when you start approaching life and thinking about these memorable moments and really put another way, what can I do differently this week or this month that I'm going to remember 10 years from now? I think that was kind of a cool way that Chris framed this, where he said it has to be something he A, hasn't done before, and B, wouldn't just do on a whim normally. So is that the framework? That really is kind of a cool way to approach just, hey, what is this month going to look like? What are the one or two things that I could do that would fit both those requirements? And yeah, I mean, it definitely has me brainstorming. I fear, Jonathan, that this is one of those things that I would love to implement, but I just fear is not going to happen for me for some reason. And it's going to be 12 months from now, 24 months from now, and I'm going to look back and say, man, I really wish that I would have done that. So I'm kind of challenging myself to do it, but I have this bad feeling that I'm not going to follow through for some reason.
You know, but does it have to be exactly what he did? Does it have to be once a month? What if it were once every other month? I mean, why does it have, it doesn't have to be the exact thing he's doing. You know, I look back and, you know, you say you have a bad memory. I have a bad memory. I remember very little from my childhood. It took me 128 episodes to remember that I went to community college. Like, I just blank out decades of my life. And if you think about it, that is a tragedy, right? Especially if we're saying time is your most precious resource and you're documenting these little things. You could create a photo journal around these memorable events and you could go back and you could look, this last month I did this particular event. You know, I'm wondering with the San Francisco group, if that mirror maze is something that they're like, oh, we got to go check that out, and what feedback will come back. I would love if I go to San Francisco or if I can find one somewhere closer in this area to go do a mirror maze. That sounds amazing. You know, there's all these types of little things. I feel like it's a tragedy that I have so few memorable moments from the first 30 some odd years of my life that I've just kind of let it go by, getting through the habits. And I'm sure I did amazing stuff, but I haven't really documented it in the same way that you document your net worth, your progress over time. But you could go back and you could look that day that you finally got back to broke, that day that you finally had a positive net worth. How much more amazing would it be able to look at a timeline of your events? And I know Facebook tries to do something silly like that where they pop back and they say, hey, on this day you did this. Obviously, they latched on to the idea. I don't know if that's the perfect solution, though. How cool would it be to have like an Excel sheet, a very simple Excel sheet with dates and months and links. And each link takes you to like maybe a write-up that you did of that special event, plus a couple pictures, all of that being stored inside a Google Drive that you have of these memorable moments that you can then share, you know, in your own type of way. And it's stored on the cloud or something like that so that it's not just lost whenever your computer eventually crashes. So my mind is thinking along those ways, especially as we start talking about the value of time and me realizing that I just have massive blank, you know, years that I have nothing memorable to show for them.
That's definitely powerful. That hits home to me for sure. And yeah, I mean, it kind of speaks to some hybrid of these memorable moments, A, and B, some type of journaling practice where at least you just jot down, hey, what did I do this month? Oh, maybe I could even put it into my Todoist app and just say on the 30th of every month, take 5 minutes and jot down what you did this month. And then at least you have a little journal of, hey, these were the cool things that happened in my life, what was going on, et cetera, right? Like, I think that would be kind of neat. So yeah, and thanks for letting me off the hook there a little bit. I agree that it doesn't have to be every month, but I think just that mental reframe of looking for these memorable moments and these memorable things you can do that are just kind of a little bit outside of your normal life, I think that will help all of us just kind of look for adventure. How many of us have adventure in our normal day-to-day life? It's pretty hard. You're just in the grind, right? But if you could do one thing that is adventure-filled or different a month, hey, that's not too shabby. Or like you said, even a couple times a year, but just thinking about it and looking for that. I think that's a takeaway for me.
And you know, part of what they say just from a psychological perspective is, yes, you enjoy the experience. Yes, you enjoy the event. But you know what you enjoy more? Is remembering the experience, remembering the event. From like a psychological perspective, that actually brings more joy to your life than it was while you were actually on it, because everything's warmer, you know, everything is in highlight. Your brain just it romanticizes the event. So I just think it's powerful to have these experiences, to position yourself to do these types of things, but then to be able to go back and reference them and think about it and say, you know what? That was a memorable year. And that's something that my family will have for the rest of time that we can go back to. There is really something there. There's a reason that in this digital age, scrapbooks are still so popular and family DVDs are still so popular. It's the power of being able to go back to a memory. And then finally, obviously, this episode was about Chris taking the initiative to start this program to solve a problem in his life, which is, hey, 9 out of 10 certified financial planners do not have a sole fiduciary responsibility. And I'm going to remind you, we did this episode at the beginning of the year with several financial planners, and this was their single advice to us that whenever you go and you interview a new CFP, the one question you have to ask is, are you a fiduciary in every single aspect of your interaction with us, or do you partition stuff out? And they were adamant how critical that was, because they're trying to safeguard their clients and their clients' families from like these wolves. That is these wolves. Yeah, that's an animal, Brad, that eats sheep.
Oh, a wolf. Wolf. I think this might be a dialect thing.
Well, we'll just make it work. Anyways, where I was going with that before is that, you know, the biggest thing is, who can you point your family to that if they need help with these types of services, if they want someone either to handhold or to help them with particular financial goals, you can do that. And you don't have to spend $2,500, $3,000 plus dollars a year to get this types of service, or you don't have to pay these exorbitant assets under management type fees that we've kind of talked about how painful they are. You can basically send them with trust and know exactly what type of service that they're going to get. And the problem for many financial planners is obviously scalability. The good ones that are out there, when you find them, they are amazing at helping you come up with a plan that is tailored to your specific situation. But all of the data that they have to wrangle to get it organized, to get it in flow, it's very, very time consuming. So you have to find that sweet spot in pricing that allows them to do that. And then scaling that up, that's the challenge. And so what Chris landed on is, I think that I can blend technology with the personal aspect, and we can use technology to do all the grunt work, to get all of those random accounts and assets and everything else that you need under one intuitive interface that's fun and easy to use. But then we can still have that sole fiduciary planner come in and help you with the personal aspect. You can't separate those out. You have to have both. And I mean, I think he's hit the sweet spot just because, I mean, you have seen this thing. Like, he's talking about starting this. He had the idea and launched it basically beginning of last year, fully funded, in place, ready to go. And it is just, it's amazing to see how quickly an idea that solves a problem, incorporating technology and that relatable, personable aspect, there's room for that. And it's really cool to see it come together.
Yeah, I agree, Jonathan. I think Chris found a problem and he realized it was a major issue with this financial advisory business. Like you said, a $2,500 plus cost to get a plan, most weren't fiduciaries, and you need probably $1 million even to get in the door. So that clearly isn't accessible to everyone. So yeah, he came up with a workaround that really hits on a lot of things that we think are valuable. And we'll say, Jonathan, you and I have not used Grove, so we cannot vouch for it personally, but I can say he's hitting on the right notes for me, at least, just to kind of close this out, is fiduciary for sure. They're absolutely fiduciaries. It's only $600, at least at the current moment, for an entire plan, because they've made it that efficient manner where it's a mix of computers and humans. And also Chris, we know just personally, is a FI community member, and he's coming from the right place. Now, I suspect, considering he's the CEO, that'll translate and continue on. So it certainly has all the right building blocks in place for it to be a nice option, at least for people in the FI community and beyond looking for that financial plan. So yeah, it's a very, very interesting thing.
And talking about translating, I just brought a smile to my face when he was saying how people in the office, you know, in this business are now packing their lunch and bringing it with them to work. Because again, we're saying he is your Silicon Valley brother, man, because this is exactly what you do. When you come to my house to record, you're packing your lunch, bringing it with you, take your break, eat it, and then we come back in, you know, whatever. But that's like, that is hilarious that he's doing that. He's been doing that with his business when he comes in, packing his lunch. And then now the people that are working with them, this is now the new norm. It's not going out to lunch. He's changed the culture, you know, or rather he's created the culture at this particular startup.
Yeah, I can only imagine how much you and Danny chuckled at me the first couple of times I came over with my brown bag lunch. But like you said, that's just how I live. So it's a nice home packed lunch. Never hurts anybody, right?
Never hurts anybody. How did you get to FI? I packed my lunch every day. Well done, sir. Well done. So Brad, I do love tech. I love tech that solves problems. I love tech that makes life easier. Actually, another tool has come on my radar very, very recently. And I heard about it. I was starting to see it come up in the Facebook group. And then actually Jared, who writes over at, I believe, fifthwheelpt.com, he actually messaged me and told me this is quickly becoming my favorite financial tool. And the tool is M1 Finance. He got me curious. And so I went and I checked around and I was so blown away by the features that I actually got on the phone with the CEO, Brian Barnes, to just ask him, how the heck do they do this? How are they able to set this up? So I'll tell you a little bit about that. Before that, let me kind of open this up for you and explain what it does. So M1 Finance is like a commission-free platform. It's basically competing with like a Fidelity. But if you look at like Vanguard, right, they have a really clunky interface. It's not fun to use. Everybody loves Vanguard. Nobody's like a huge fan of the Vanguard platform. We love that they keep their expenses low though, so it's fine. Fidelity doesn't necessarily even have that excuse, but it's still an outdated platform. M1 Finance is just beautiful to look at. The next point for me that just blows my mind is that it is commission-free. They do not charge you any sort of assets under management. They don't charge you to purchase ETFs, anything like that. So you can't access mutual funds. So you will not be able to get VTSAX on this platform. But one of the problems with VTSAX has always been you have to get a $10,000 minimum in order to buy into it. So there's some workarounds from that. You can purchase, you know, VTI, which is the ETF, at $120+ a share. Then on top of that, maybe you, once you're up to a certain amount, you could get to you could purchase a mutual fund VTSMX, but that requires $3,000 minimums. Those have just kind of always been baked in, and we've tried to give people workarounds. What's incredible about M1 Finance is they actually allow you to purchase fractional shares of ETFs. It blows my mind. So now think this through. The only advantage that VTSAX has over the ETF VTI is that you are able to buy fractional shares. The actual expense ratio is the exact same. You can purchase VTI on the M1 Finance platform and you can purchase fractional shares. And there are no commissions, no assets under management fee for that.
Yeah, Jonathan, that sounds cool. And I know when you got off the phone with him, you like literally started a barrage of messages to me. Like, I've never seen you as excited about a platform or just essentially anything as you were about this M1 Finance. I basically signed up for it, just because of how excited you are. So I have not tested it yet, but I'm signed up. I moved, I think, like $1,000 in there just to kind of test it out. But yeah, I definitely will get back to you and the audience, obviously, in a couple of weeks when I figure out how the platform works. But I guess my first question to you is, okay, they don't charge commissions. There's no assets under management. How do these people make money? That's always like the real question to me.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And so I asked Brian this exact question, and what they do is basically securities lending. It's kind of like a banking model. So one of the things that actually makes this even more cool is if you have assets with them that you have invested either in ETFs or whatever else. So that, keep in mind, they let you purchase all of your, it's not just this VTI ETF. You can purchase Apple, you can purchase Facebook, you can purchase all of your individual stocks on this platform, but you can do it in fractional shares. So if you can't afford a certain amount of Amazon, you can buy a fractional share of Amazon, which is cool. Now imagine you get to a point in time where you have like 100,000 saved up in one of these, you know, not in a pre-tax bucket, but in a taxable account. They will now allow you to take a loan out up to 50% of the amount of money that you have invested with them, and they will charge you a fixed 3.5% interest rate. This is amazing. This completely negates the need to have a HELOC altogether. You don't need a credit check for it because they have all of your assets in place right there. And so I know one of the things that we were talking about in terms of problems was like where to park your emergency fund. And people are like, well, a true emergency is if you were to lose your job. What if you were to lose your job at the same time the market goes down? You would have to take that out and you need to take out, you know, maybe $20,000 of your $100,000 right as the market's going down. That's going to take out an outsized piece of that pie until you get things sorted. This completely solves that. You can take out a short-term or whatever. You can take out a $20,000 loan at a fixed 3.5% interest rate and allow yourself to get some extra time to get it solved, get whatever you need to get solved, leaving your money in the market. So it's not, you're not taking it out based on whatever the market is doing. You know, if for whatever reason it extends past that point in time, you can always sell those assets and pay off a loan because you had the assets. But this gives you that extra delay step, which completely, like, it adds an extra element to the power of the emergency fund episode that we did with Big Earn.
Yeah, that's an interesting wrinkle. I haven't researched it enough to know all the fine print details, but it certainly sounds like a pretty cool extra option, which is what we're always looking for, right? Just options and ways to access our money like we talked about in that episode with the emergency fund. So that's really neat.
Don't end me. I have one more really cool thing that I'm excited about. I can hear you. Sure, you're transitioning.
I'm sure you do.
So the other thing that's really cool, because now you can do these fractional shares, you can, let's say you have like 90% of your or 80% of your money into like one of these low cost index funds that we were talking about. But you kind of want to do something on the side. You're interested in maybe, you know, investing or getting a little bit more of an investment in some very specific companies. You can create your own portfolio on the side, and it can tell you whether or not you're getting out of weight based on what percentage you want to have in each individual company. And instead of selling that or doing like a rebalance, quote unquote, because you can do fractional shares on anything that you purchase, you can tell it, I want to invest $100 every week, every 2 weeks, every month, whatever amount you specified, it will then reallocate that and just purchase a little bit more of that fractional share to get round out the pie to hit whatever model you decided to hit. And you can actually share, or you can learn what models other people are using. You can actually share that kind of like in a network. So there's just a lot of really, really cool stuff here. And this absolutely solves a problem. And then the final thing, and this is the thing I was kind of worried about, because they do not, you know, like how Personal Capital allows you to track all of your accounts in different places. M1 does not do that. They will only show you the assets that they have with them. You know, that's the only downside, right? I don't want to necessarily have all this stuff orphaned out there where I can't track it in my net worth. I checked yesterday with Personal Capital, and you can bring in all of your M1 into your Personal Capital account so that you can see it all there. So you can still use Personal Capital as your dashboard and use M1 for your taxable accounts or, you know, your pre-tax accounts, but you can use it to get this really beautiful interface for investing with no commissions. So I was like, Brian, this is blowing my mind. This is solving so many problems, and I want to be a part of this. So we did set up an affiliate link. If you're interested in checking that out, you can just go to choosify.com/M1. M as in Mary and the number one. Choosify.com/M1. So next, Brad, we got a voicemail from Tim, and I'm really excited to play this because I think it speaks to like the diversity of the audience that gets benefit. In my mind, this podcast I thought would really appeal to people that were maybe in the entry-level middle class to maybe even the upper middle class. And I'm saying this just from the perspective, like an income perspective. I have seen it's just grabbing people. Everybody benefits from this concept. Even the ones that have completely blown up the income game still find this idea of value so compelling. And we got this voicemail from Tim that I truly am excited to play this on the show.
Hey guys, how are you? I wanted to call in or leave a voicemail and just let you know a little bit about me as your listener. I loved hearing you guys on the White Coat Investor. I listened to both of the podcasts independently, and I'm glad to see my two worlds are colliding. I am a high-income individual, so I like the WCI stuff. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a dental specialist practicing on the West Coast, not in California because I don't want to pay those taxes. But I made $750 last year, very excited about that. And the reason why I mentioned that is because of the following. So out of $270,000 in student loan debts that my wife and I both had together, which is a low number for what I do, but we're down to just $30,000 left. I'll have that paid off in 2 months. I'm very excited. Just hit the 1 million net worth number. And unfortunately, my FI number is going to be 4 to 5 million based on our annual spending. And it's really sick to say, but it's probably going to be around $150,000 or more annual spending once our debts are paid off. The 1 million that I mentioned before was my net worth on Personal Capital, which I got from you guys. Thank you so much. And been doing a lot of rewards stuff too. Thank you very much for that with the credit cards, what I mean to say. And then additionally, I have lost a lot of money trying to time the market, and I'm no longer doing that. Thanks to you guys, I'm just sticking to low-cost index funds, and I feel great about it. I don't have to wake up in the morning and check my phone to see what the futures are doing that day in the market. Blah, I'm done with that. Three little kids, and I'm already saving for college for them. More importantly, I'm trying to teach them frugality and intentional spending. Just wanted to thank you for what you do, what you put out there. I really appreciate the message, and I completely agree with everything you guys are saying. Maybe at a different level because of my income or whatnot, but in lifestyle creep, I guess. But I still feel like I'm a frugal soul, if that makes sense. And I like to penny pinch every now and again. Still trying to convince my wife on some things, but hey, I love her so much, it doesn't matter. So anyways, keep up the good work. You know, we're out here doing what we can, and we really enjoy what you guys are putting out there. Thanks for everything.
You know, Brad, and I'm thinking one of the reasons he was apologizing for the $150,000 annual spend was, you know, you on the White Coat Investor podcast saying, I can't even imagine how someone can spend $100,000 a year if they have no mortgage, if they have no debt, if they have no car payment. What does it even look like? But, you know, I think it's the principles. I think one of the reasons I wanted to play this is like, this is not a show where we're telling you have to live on $20,000 a year. You have to live on $7,000 a year. We just want everybody listening to this to be able to beat the game. And it's the same equation that we're all subject to. Your income minus your expenses is equal to the gap. And we are focused on the Choose If I podcast on how can we grow the gap. For some people like Tim in this message, clearly he does not have an income problem. He does not need to focus on that part of the equation. If he just gets a little bit intentional, gets a little bit focused, he's got the game beat in like a probably less than 5 year period of time. And then from there, it's a choice. Does he want to continue to go? And it's a choice based on value and how much does he value his free time versus his work? I mean, that's really incredible. It's a position I wish everybody would find themselves in. Other people listening to this, you know, maybe you just literally got your first job and maybe you're making $15,000 a year, $20,000 a year. I get that is a radically different message for you. And for you, like you can only pinch pennies so far. It will only go so far for you. We're looking, all right, how can we make every penny we have go farther? And how can we multiply that income? What does that look like? Because people that were in your situation have figured it out and they're willing to reach the hand back and tell you what they did. And then it's your choice. Do I want to do that? And so that's why this idea of FI representing this life optimization strategy is so addictive. What does it look like to beat the game in your specific situation? You know, very likely you're listening to this and you're like, wow, that's incredible. You know what? I'm not going to become a dental specialist with all the education and commitment that that requires. What else would it look like? What other path can I take? There are 60 episodes on the show that have gone in 60 different directions of people that have made a different choice and gotten the results that they wanted, because you get to enough long before you get to rich.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And FI is a choice, and it's a choice that everyone can make no matter where they are on the income spectrum, certainly. And obviously, Tim is at the significant far end of high income, and that's great. And he's able to live a life that enables him to reach financial independence. Sure, does the $150,000 that he's going to spend in FI each year, does that sound like a lot to my ears? It does. But it's not my place to say that. It's irrelevant. It's just that's what works for his life. And they've made that decision that these are expenses that we want to undertake. So that's what I care about, is that people are intentional about what they're doing and not just grazing through life and just doing things at that unconscious level. Right. So intentionality is important. And yeah, Jonathan, you kind of talked about the 100K thing that I mentioned on the White Coat Investor. And I realized that probably fell on deaf ears a little bit. That might have been my one little misstep there. But people can make decisions as they see fit. But find what actually adds value to your life, not just, hey, this is what other high income people do and send their kids to private school or do X, Y, and Z. It's just do what works for your life. That's my big takeaway.
And to just give you some direct feedback, man, that is awesome. You know, and in particular, I was thinking about the stress that you feel with regards to like looking and checking to see what the futures are doing and how you just don't have to think about that anymore. And dude, I am on the same page. Like, I just do not care. I don't have to think about it every single day. There's lots of stuff that I do check in every single day, but what my investments are doing on a day-to-day basis, I'm just not worried about. I care about trends, obviously, over time. I'm looking at it maybe on a, you know, once a month, once a every 6 months, once a year, something like that. But I'm glancing at it. It doesn't impact my quality of life in any way, shape, or form. You know, the simple path to wealth, right? That is very, very appealing. And I love to see how you're still benefiting from this. So thank you so much for calling in with your story. That's really, really cool. One more voicemail for you guys that I got from Luke. Enlisted in the military, came up with a problem that he was being transferred to a new area and was trying to figure out a smarter way to do housing. Came up with a solution, wants to share it with you guys.
Hi, Brad and Jonathan. I apologize in advance for the long message. My name is Luke. I have been a loyal listener of the podcast since day one, and I have been on the FIPE path for as long as I can remember, always saving every penny and streamlining all aspects of my life to try and achieve a higher and higher level of productivity. I left you a voicemail and posted on the Facebook group a couple of months ago to crowdsource suggestions on house hacking. I'm 29, single, and in the military. Last year, my roommates moved out, and I found myself looking for a FI living situation. Unfortunately, because of where I'm stationed, it wouldn't make sense to go with traditional house hacking. By this, I mean purchasing a home, duplex, triplex, etc., and filling it with roommates. The market simply is not healthy enough to warrant purchasing a home here. I searched all over for out-of-the-box ideas, looking at casitas, those little micro-homes that come pre-made and are technologically sophisticated, basically like an iPhone house. I looked at networking to live with older empty nesters who might need various things done around the house that need a young person's labor. I also looked at tiny homes. Living with an older couple was promising, but I wanted to pursue living solo first, since I have a dog. He's hypoallergenic and very loyal and caring, but still, I didn't want to impose him on anyone. The other options were really expensive. Casitas, while really freaking cool, cost about $150,000 and can't be moved. Tiny homes are well over 50 grand and are difficult to move because they're so darn heavy. Moving around every couple of years in the military makes these options just less than ideal. Long story short, I ended up looking at a vintage camper trailer and found one on Craigslist. It's a 15.5 foot 1988 Sunline Saturn. The couple from whom I bought it were the only owners and they took very good care of it. As with most older campers, it didn't come without flaw. There was a little bit of water damage in the back, but I was able to rebuild the back frame even stronger and it only cost $200 in lumber. I turned the back bench into a permanent bed with an awesome mattress. I primed and painted everything and put in new bamboo flooring. I took down some shelves, I updated some hardware, and furnished the place. It now looks like an open concept HGTV heaven. I downsized a lot, selling furniture, cookware, books, bedroom stuff, and clothes. Whatever I couldn't sell, I gave away to charity or friends so that as little as possible went to waste. My profit from selling everything came out to $2,000. Now for the really fun stuff, the stuff that everybody wants to hear, the numbers. I bought the camper for $2,950. And put $2,500 into it for a total of $5,450. If you subtract the $2,000 I made from selling my stuff, it comes out to $3,450. I pay $200 a month in rent at the RV park, which is less than 5 minutes from base, saved me a ton on my commute, both in dollars and minutes. Plus, I get to brag to everyone that my rent is only $200 a month. Adding in electrical, laundry, and upkeep, it comes out to $250 a month, which is $3,000 a year. Last year alone, I paid almost $12,000 in rent, including utilities, and that was living with roommates. This year, I will have spent $5,950, which includes the rent and utilities and the cost of the camper. That's over 50% in savings on last year, which will give me an extra $6,000 to invest in my various buckets. I hope this doesn't come across as boastful, but this should boost my savings rate from 60% to around 70%. In addition, with the DIY renovations, I'm confident I could sell it for at least $7,000 or $8,000 if I choose to do so in the future. As if this weren't enough, everything in my life has become streamlined. Everything I do is productive because every day starts with me doing the required 5 to 10 minutes of chores to keep my place tidy. This doesn't sound like much, but as I'm sure many in the FI community can relate to, once you get the ball rolling, it's really hard to stop it. Finally, I'm infinitely happier. I'm the king of my own castle, where I can let my OCD podcast FI nerd self just be myself, where the only one judging me is my faithful companion. I've started writing articles for a blog that I plan on publishing in the next few weeks, and one of my goals for 2018 is to be a guest on the Choose FI podcast, to share my experiences being a single, millennial, military, tiny camper house dweller with everyone, especially the young soldiers and sailors out there. I can't thank the community enough for all of their terrific suggestions and ideas, and I thank you guys for growing this phenomenal community of amazing people. As you guys so often say on the podcast, the fire, my friends, is spreading.
Brad, does that sound like a podcast episode you'd be interested in producing?
Yeah, you bet. Holy cow. That sounds amazing. I was trying to jot down all the things that I wanted to mention after Luke finished up his voicemail there, but I just gave up because there are just too many. So yeah, a podcast episode sounds absolutely perfect. Luke, holy cow. That's just ridiculous. I mean, how can you? I'm speechless. Honestly, I am just astounded. He did this for $3,000 and is saving now 70%+ of his income. And it sounds like enjoying life, optimizing life. It hits on everything. So yeah, Jonathan, I'm totally on board.
All right, guys. Well, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. As you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. And there's a couple books that we're just huge fans of. J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth, Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future, and Vincent Puglisi's book, Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter the drawing for one of these books, all you need to do, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there and leave us a short written review. And then send us an email to feedback@choosefi.com letting us know that you left a review and what the screen name you left it under was. There's also an option on that same page if you use Stitcher instead to leave a review on Stitcher if you don't use iTunes. We give away one book for every 5 written reviews that we get, and we announce the winners on the Friday roundup. Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Arthur. And Arthur left this review over at Stitcher and said, I'm a physical therapist. My wife is an occupational therapist. We've discovered this path of FI mid-January and have been listening to your podcast since early February. My job as a home care PT allows me to listen to you guys all day, now at 1.5x speed. So good job there, Arthur. My wife is that jealous that I'm almost caught up. In short, Choose FI has made our life exciting and hopeful. Your podcast has allowed us to pick our heads out of bed a little easier because we know we are saving for something more than a starter home. We are saving up for that perpetual money-making machine so we can spend our days raising our kids and doing things that offer more fulfillment and value. Before discovering FI, our answers to family and friends about when we're planning to have kids were, oh, we feel the need to be more financially stable, or we need to find a better hospital to work for. In truth, we are both with great employers and we already had 8 times our annual expense saved. It was all about perspective. Knowing it is possible for us to reach FI in a relatively short time, we have found hope. We cut back our Netflix time, achieve many FI milestones, and are setting more goals. My wife is now joining me in the gym more often and know we are ready to build a family. Thank you for all the great content and wonderful guests you bring to the show. Cheers.
That's amazing. Congratulations on those little gains over time and also how it's changed your perspective overall. We're excited that you're benefiting from this, and thank you for sharing it with us and with our audience. All right, guys, if you got value from the episode today, if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, just take 1 second and press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. It just lets the providers know that you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. The fire is spreading, my friends. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.